Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, bringing you an hour of crime later on, a 1946 episode of Philo Vance, but first, true crime on This Is Your FBI. This episode from ABC, called The Friendly Hitchhiker, first heard on August 16th, 1946.
This is your FBI. This is your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Tonight's FBI file, The Friendly Hitchhiker.
One of the outstanding characteristics of the average American is a natural friendliness toward the stranger. Now, this is an admirable trait, and certainly, in general, it is one to be preserved and encouraged. But unfortunately, there are a great many persons at large who make criminal capital of friendliness. And there are many occasions, such as in tonight's case from the files of your FBI, when it is wise to avoid the stranger altogether. Already the prairie growth was beginning to take on the first tints of a Texas panhandle sunset. And as the young man in the sailor suit trudging along the highway with his battered suitcase, it looked as if night would catch him still some 50 miles from his goal, Amarillo. Unless this car that's coming down the highway stops.
All right, Thumb, will you stop?
East, sailor?
Yes, sir.
Then get aboard, son.
Gee, thanks. I was afraid you were going to plow right on by.
I didn't notice your uniform until I was right on you.
Oh, some people stop for it, some don't. I guess you can't blame anybody for not wanting to take a chance on a hitchhiker.
How far are you coming from, sailor?
Oh, I just got my discharge in California the other day. Been in the hospital out there.
Yeah, I guess that means you earned one of those campaign ribbons the hard way.
Wasn't as hard for me as it was for some of the other fellas, though.
Where are you bound?
Amarillo.
Well, so am I.
No kidding.
Is that home?
Yes, sir. My uncle has a place outside of town. He's a retired rancher.
I see. Well, now that you're out of the Navy, what are you going to do?
Well, I've got to go to work. Say, you haven't got a job for me, have you?
I'm afraid a young fellow with your experiences wouldn't find my kind of business very exciting.
Well, what kind of business are you in, sir?
I pick up stocks of jewelry that small retail stores get stuck with and sell it at auction at my shop in Los Angeles.
Oh, I see.
I'm picking up some stuff in Amarillo this evening.
Uh-huh.
Oh, by the way, what's a good hotel in Amarillo?
Well, two or three good ones. Oh, but look, mister, you don't have to spend your money on a hotel.
What do you mean?
Well, you've been nice to me, giving me a lift. I know my uncle will be more than glad to have you. Why don't you stay with us till you get ready to go back?
Well, no, I wouldn't want to impose.
Oh, you don't impose on people in Texas by staying with them, mister. You'll make them very happy. And besides, you'll get some real old cowhand cooking and lots of fresh air that's swell for sleeping. How about it?
Sold.
Swell.
Some 300 miles back west, and shortly before the hitchhiker was picked up, Special Agents Allen and Burnett of the FBI's Los Angeles office engaged in a manhunt, landed at the Albuquerque airport in response to a police report. After a brief conference at police headquarters, they procured a car and drove at once to a tourist camp west of the city for a talk with the owner.
Well, gentlemen, that picture sure looks like the young fellow that stopped here last night, all right. Only he was wearing a sailor suit with a lot of ribbons.
What kind of a car was he driving, sir?
It was a black Chevy sedan, California license.
Do you remember the license number?
No, sir.
About how old was it?
Well, I'd say it was the same as my brother's got, a 42.
Well, that checks, Burnett. What name did he register under?
Jack Smith. Here it is on the register right over here. There it is. Jack Smith.
Mm-hmm. Burnett, where's that sample of Jack Newton's handwriting?
Here you are.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I'd say it was the same writing, Alan.
Yes. May we borrow this page for a few days, sir? We'll return it to you.
Why, sure you can. His real name is Newton, huh?
Well, the man we're looking for used the name of Jack Newton.
He jumped his parole in Los Angeles 2 days ago. Got a sailor uniform, some ribbons, rented a car, and took out with it.
Well...
We put out a general police alert as soon as the car was reported missing, but we were just a little too late with it to nail him here.
Well, what time did he leave, sir?
Well, he didn't pull in till around daylight. Slept till about noon, then took off.
And that gives him about a 6-hour start on us.
That's well, right. If he kept on east on this highway, he could have made Amarillo by now.
May I use your phone, sir?
Why, certainly. Help yourself.
Well, what's our move, Alan?
We'll notify Amarillo to spread a 300-mile alarm, then head for there ourselves.
Right this way, Mr. Ogden.
Very well.
This will be your room right here, sir.
Well, thank you. I still feel that this is sort of an imposition.
Oh,
I wish you'd stop saying that, Mr. Ogden. You're going to make my uncle real sore, right, Unc?
He certainly will. You were nice enough to give my nephew a ride here. The least I can do is try to repay you for that kindness.
Well, I certainly appreciate it.
Any particular time you want to be getting up in the morning?
Yes, pretty early. I have to be in town by 9:00.
Well, we'll see that you're up on time, Mr. Ogden.
Sure. That's no problem here.
Thank you.
Well, good night, sir.
Good night.
Good night, Mr. Ogden.
Good night.
Now, Jack, suppose you give me the tally on all this.
Where do we get out of range?
Okay. Now, what's the story?
Well, I landed out of L.A. 3 days ago.
Yeah?
This morning, the hot car I was driving got too hot and caught fire, so I had to hoof it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a few miles down the road, see, when this Ogden guy gives me a lift.
Now, that's fine, but why did you bring him here? I'm not running any tourist camp.
Let me give you the whole rundown, will you?
Well?
I pumped the guy on the way in. Found that he's a jewelry auctioneer in Los Angeles.
Legitimate businessman?
That's right.
Now, look, son. Running a hideout for you cross-country boys in trouble and taking in legits at the same time is dangerous business. I don't want
to
get...
Let me finish, will you? This guy's going into Amarillo in the morning to pick up a load of jewelry. Then he's coming back here again. Get it?
Oh.
Now, if we can't figure out some way to split that jewelry between us, we ought to give up. Now, do you see why I brought him here?
Yeah, yeah.
Does it still bother you?
Bother me? Son, how can you say such a thing? Well, I've never entertained a more welcome guest.
Knocked off 240 miles of it, Alan.
Yeah, that leaves about 50 more to Amarillo.
I hope there's good news waiting for us.
Well, not much chance this soon. If we didn't contact Amarillo from the tourist camp in time for them to head off Newton before he got there.
But they spread out a 300-mile alarm north, east, and south of there.
Yeah, I know. Slow down, Burnett.
Huh? What for?
There's a car off the road there, up ahead.
Oh, yeah. No taillight either.
Oh. Maybe we better have a look.
You don't think we're going to find Newton parked out here.
Burnett, look. That car's been on fire.
Yeah.
Come on, let's take a look at it.
Yeah, right.
Looks pretty well burned out, too.
Yeah? Ed, you got your flash?
Yeah, right here. Hey, look at that license. That's Newton's car, all right.
And there's no one in it. This'll make Newton a little harder to find.
Well, he's still probably wearing the sailor suit, and certainly he still has the same face, hair, eyes, and build. And if he's on foot now, that could slow him down a lot.
I hope so.
He might even be somewhere around Amarillo right now. Well, let's take a quick look around here and then drive in there and find out.
Digging that hole
for, Art? Looking for oil?
Son, I told you to stay in the house and keep a lookout for Ogden.
It's not back from town yet. What's with the digging?
Well, to tell you the truth, this is something special for him.
What do you mean?
Well, we can't take his jewelry and let him go, can we?
What?
That'd be all right for you, because you're pulling out, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm staked out right here, and he could have the law on me in no time.
Yeah, but if you bump him
Look,
off...
who'd ever think he was buried in a hole down back old man Fillmore's corral? I'm a respectable citizen in these parts, huh?
Yeah, sure, but just the same...
Hold down. Oh, listen. Here's Ogden now, just pulling into the drive. Come on, let's get back to the house.
That you, Mr. Ogden?
Yes.
Jack and I is down to look after the stock a little.
Oh?
Have to treat them like babies, you know.
Yes, I'll bet you do.
Come on up to the house.
Very well.
Did you get your business in town taken care of all right?
Yes, all done.
You mean you got that suitcase full of jewels?
Well, not quite full.
Kind of dangerous traveling with them, I'd think. But I reckon you packed a gun with you.
Yes, but thank goodness I've never had to use it yet.
Go in, sir, go in.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Jack.
Thanks.
Well, reckon you might as well set your jewels down right here in the kitchen, Mr. Ogden.
I beg your pardon?
Look, it's me that ought to be begging your pardon instead of you begging mine. But I guess we won't make any ceremony about it.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Well, now, maybe this will be more convincing. All right, son. Take his gun off him and any identifying papers that might be in his pocket.
Yeah, sure.
I'll take a look in this suitcase. Hey, there must be a fortune in jewels in here.
No kidding.
Find his gun?
Yeah, I got it.
Just look at all this stuff.
Unc.
Huh?
You slugged Ogden with that blackjack.
Yeah?
The cops found Ogden's gun in his hand. They might figure he shot you just before he passed out, right?
I suppose they would if that was the case, but... What do you mean, son?
I mean, this way I get all the jewels in Ogden's car, too.
No, wait a minute. You can't do it.
You know, Unc? Maybe there would have been room for both of you in that hole.
There are hundreds of honest persons in and out of uniform, hitchhiking along the highways of America today. But the safest policy for any motorist is this. No matter when or where you see a hitchhiker's thumb, keep right on going. It may cost you no more than time to stop, but in thousands of cases, it has cost a lot more. Special Agents Allen and Burnett of the FBI had arrived at the Amarillo police headquarters when a telephone call came in from the Fillmore place just out of town. Since the message involved the man they were trailing, Allen and Burnett were given complete charge, and a few minutes later...
All right, Mr. Ogden, let's have the rest of the story, sir.
Well, when I came to, I was lying on the floor there. Not more than 3 feet from his body, and I had the pistol in my hand.
This is your pistol, Mr. Ogden?
Yes, but I swear I didn't shoot him.
Well, if you were being threatened with a blackjack, you would have been justified in defending yourself.
But there wasn't time. It all happened so quickly.
Mr. Ogden, Just how were you lying on the floor when you came to, sir?
Well, I was...
Will you show us, if you don't mind, sir?
Well, of course I don't.
Thank you.
I was just about like this.
Half on your right side like that?
Yes.
And when you came to, sir, where was the pistol?
I was holding it in this... In my... Why... Well, that proves I couldn't have shot him. The pistol was in my left hand.
Where is your shoulder holster placed?
Why, here. You can see for yourself, right here. Under my left arm. I'm right-handed. If I had shot Fillmore, the gun would have been in my right hand.
Now, Mr. Ogden, we're not trying to pin a murder on you, sir. In your case, it wouldn't have been murder anyway. We're merely trying to establish evidence that will help fasten the guilt on the real murderer.
It's pretty obvious what actually happened.
Yes, you see, after Fillmore struck you down, Jack Newton took your gun, shot Fillmore, put the gun in your hand, took all the jewels for himself, and escaped in your car.
But in his hurry, he made the mistake of putting the gun in your left hand.
I'm awfully glad he did.
Burnett, will you get on the phone and start telling the police about the body here?
Yeah, right.
Before you're through, I'll have Mr. Ogden's full description of his car.
Okay. Operator. Operator, give me Amarillo Police Headquarters.
And Burnett, have the police broadcast a description of Newton and the car, then set up roadblocks as quick as possible in every direction.
Hello, Headquarters?
Now, Mr. Ogden, if you'll give me a full description of your car...
Coffee, miss.
Okay. Cream and sugar?
No, just black.
Okay. There you are.
Thanks.
Would you like something with that?
Uh-uh.
A jelly donut?
I don't want nothing.
Okay. Which way are you traveling?
Why?
Making conversation.
Heading east.
Oh. Well, the reason I asked was if you're going to be on the road tonight, you'd better look out.
For what?
For what I heard on the radio.
What are you talking about?
It was an FBI broadcast.
What?
They said everybody should be on the lookout for this man that just murdered somebody in Amarillo.
They say what he looked like?
Uh-huh. They said he was about 25 years old and had brown hair and kind of greenish eyes and might be wearing a suit.
What do I owe you?
Well, you only had coffee.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. You get some change.
Keep it.
Probably scared him. Tell him about that. Wait a minute. Brown hair, green eyes, sailors. Oh. Hey, operator. Operator.
Burnett, the police have got roadblocks set up for a radius of 300 miles around Amarillo.
Good.
How's your map coming?
Well, I've got just about every roadside gas station, lunch stand, and tourist camp in the entire area staked out with these pins.
Oh, good work.
Are they going to repeat the broadcast?
Every half hour till we make a strike.
And then all we've got to do is sit right here at the phone they've assigned us and wait.
Let's see. That's been a half hour now since the third broadcast. We ought to be hearing it.
I got my fingers crossed, Alan.
Hello? Yes. Yes, we'll put her on, please.
Well, who is it?
Operator, Las Vegas, New Mexico.
New Mexico?
Newton must be doubling back towards California. Hello? Hello? Yes. Oh, miss, please, talk a little louder and try not to be so excited.
She's all filled and ready to go. So get your trucker rolling out of here for that long haul now.
Okay. So long, Slant.
So long.
Hello.
Howdy.
I had a little trouble with my car. Broke down about 2 miles back. I'm afraid I can't be much help to you.
Oh, I didn't mean for you to go pull her in. I thought you might rent me a car to get to the next town.
Oh, there's no car here till my brother-in-law comes to relieve me in the morning.
Oh.
But I'll tell you what I'll do, son.
What's that?
If you'll just wait right here, I'll go inside and phone for somebody to come out and get you. You just wait right out here.
Wait a minute, mister.
Well?
You're not going to phone for anybody to help me? You're going to phone for somebody to come get me, just like you said.
Huh?
You heard that radio broadcast about me, didn't you?
I don't know what you're talking
about. You're lying, but you're not going to trap me.
Well, wait! Come back here!
We're the special agents of the FBI.
Say, you fellas didn't come all the way from Amarillo since I phoned.
No, we were already on the trail and called in, got your report.
Well, he ain't missed him more than an hour, and he's on foot besides.
Good.
Which way did he go?
Well, he lit out running hard as he could down the road going west.
He can't afford to keep to the road long.
No, he'd get lost out there on that desert.
A desperate man will take any kind of chance.
Of course, he might stumble onto them caves off over there.
Well, where's this, sir?
Oh, about 3 miles across the flats where the hills begin.
Burnett, let's see if we can pick up where he turned off into the desert.
Right.
If you do, you hadn't ought to have no trouble tracking him across that red sand.
That's what I figure. Come on, Burnett.
Wait a minute, Burnett.
Yes.
What's the matter? We're on this trail.
Yes, there's a fork in the trail. One goes straight ahead into the tunnel, and the other turns off sharply to the left.
Well, let's listen and see if we can pick up a sound.
Okay. Oh, he probably stopped so we couldn't hear
him. Then we'll just have to try one of these tunnels.
Yes, but if we take the wrong one, he'll double back and get out.
You can't miss hearing him do it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's take this one to the left first.
Huh? I hear him. We get the right one.
Come on!
Somebody else's life than it is your own, isn't it?
Come on,
get him.
Jack Newton was returned to the state of Texas to stand trial for the murder of Robert Fillmore. He was found guilty and sentenced to life imprisonment. As mentioned earlier, the average American's natural friendliness is an admirable trait, and one to be preserved and encouraged. The greatness of our nation is based on friendship, and without it, our rendezvous with destiny would be meaningless. But your FBI asks you to exercise caution, particularly when you feel inclined to give a lift to a hitchhiker. The files of your FBI reveal case after case proving that the safest policy with hitchhikers is to keep right on driving.
This is your FBI, on Tuned to Yesterday, an ABC broadcast from August 16, 1946. The distinct voice of Dean Carlton, the narrator, would be part of the series for nearly its entire run on ABC through the mid-1940s. His radio career bookended with actual acting jobs, from the Columbia Workshop in 1942 to The Couple Next Door with Peg Lynch in the later 1950s. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now an episode of Philo Vance from Mutual called The Mary Murder Case from October 3rd, 1946.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I have tried to show in my brief lecture just how factual are the case histories on applied psychology contained in my newest book. Are there any questions?
Mr. Merry.
Yes?
Mr. Merry, if, as you say, the subconscious is the stronger of our two minds, why doesn't it dominate us most of the time?
A very good question. In my opinion, the subconscious is held in check by a controlling band, a band that keeps it under the conscious mind. Were it possible to remove that controlling influence, I am of the opinion that the subconscious would dominate our motivations. Well, if there are no other questions, ladies and gentlemen, I have been informed I have a phone call in my office. Should any of you care to speak to me there, I assure you I shall be delighted. Thank you very much. Hello? This is Mr. Merry speaking.
Mr. Merry, this is George Haworth. I represent the Justine Literary Club. Would it be possible for you to speak to our members next Thursday?
Next Thursday?
Yes.
Well, I intended to return to the coast.
Oh?
But I think I might be able to postpone my departure. Oh, just a minute. Just a minute! Will you write me a letter, Mr. Haworth, merely confirming our appointment?
Oh, I'll be very glad to. Thank you, Mr. Merry.
Not at all. Goodbye. Coming! Oh, it's you. I thought I saw you in my audience. I hardly expected the pleasure of a personal visit. Come in. I hope you've come to tell me that you've forgotten the past. How would the French say it? Un de ces choses? One of those things? I'm glad you came to see me. I've been wanting to... Why are you staring at me like that? Why don't you say something? What do you want? Oh, no. No! No!
Yes. Vance? Mr. Vance, I'm not disturbing you, am I?
I could contribute to your ego, Miss Deering, by saying that you're quite disturbing to me. But I won't. At least, not during business hours.
I'm not disturbing during business hours, or you won't say it during business hours?
A combination of both, Miss Deering. You know, I believe I've reached the epitome of success as a private investigator. I'm so private that I haven't had an interesting or unusual client in a week.
Doesn't seem to bother you much.
It doesn't bother me at all. You know, I rather like the ambition that gets me down to my office and the circumstances that do not force me to work when I get here. It guarantees my character and places no strain whatsoever on my mentality.
Would it be too much for me to ask you to guarantee your character in your own office? After all, it's only through that door, and I have some typing to do.
Do I distract you, Miss Deering?
Well, I could contribute to your ego, Mr. Vance, by saying that you're quite distracting. So I will. You're quite distracting. Now let me get to work.
Miss Deering.
Yes?
Take a letter, please.
A letter? Okay, I take L for... Let me finish what I'm doing. Now, let me see. Take a look at the glass panel in the door.
Hmm?
You will not be at ease much longer, oh serene sir. I seem to see a female profile.
And I seem to hear a female knock.
Hmm.
Come in.
Mr. Vance here.
I'm Philo Vance. May I help you?
Yes, yes, if you only will. Mr. Vance, Oh, is there someplace we can talk alone?
Oh, don't mind me. I only work here.
Come into my office if you like. It's just through this door here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Won't you have a seat?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Vance, I'm Alice Barkley. And I've come to you because you're the only one who can help me, if anyone can.
I assure you I'll try. Just give me an idea as to what you'd like me to do.
I don't know. I don't know what anyone can do, Mr. Vance. I've just shot and killed a man.
I'm afraid you've come to the wrong office, Miss Barkley. You want the police, or perhaps that's vice versa.
Oh, but you don't understand. I can't remember anything that happened to me. Except that 2 hours ago, I was standing over a man who'd been shot in the heart. And I had a gun in my hand. And the gun was still warm from being fired.
You can't remember anything before that?
Well, I went to a lecture on applied psychology this afternoon with friends. The lecturer was Joseph Mary. You've heard of him, of course. He's written books.
Oh, yes.
All I remember was that after the lecture, I was standing over his body, and he was dead.
Mm. What did you do with the gun?
Well, I have it here. I put it in my purse and ran. It was only then that I realized I didn't know where I was running to. So I walked and walked, and then I came here. But I can't remember anything else.
Well, I'll do what I can to help you, Miss Barkley.
Oh,
but I'm pretty convinced that you'll be facing a murder charge unless you suddenly start remembering something.
Well, Mrs. Anderson, how do you think your husband looks in his new tuxedo? Pretty nifty, eh?
Please. Please, darling, I'd like to lie down for a while.
What's the trouble, Joan? Come home rather late from the lecture and you're all upset.
Here,
wait, sit down for a minute.
Oh, thank you.
That's it. I'll get you a glass of water. Here, let me have your hat and your handbag.
I'm so sorry. I guess I don't know what's come over me.
Joan, your handbag's terribly heavy. What's in it?
Well, you might as well look.
Joan, it's my gun.
Yes.
What were you doing with my gun? And one of the bullets has been fired. Joan!
Please. Please, darling, I don't know. I don't remember.
You don't remember?
All I know is that I had to take it to the lecture. Don't ask me why. And I shot a man with it.
You what?
I shot Joseph Mary.
The district attorney will see you now, Sergeant Heath. Go right in.
Thanks, Mary. Oh, how's his humor today?
Very good, I'd say. And don't change it, will you?
I'll try not to. Hi, Mr. Markham.
Hello, Heath. What do I owe the honor of the homicide department's call?
This, D.A. You've always been griping about the cases I hand you. There's always something missing, you always say, right?
Go ahead.
Now, this time I got one for you on a silver platter. Man named Joe Mary was killed in his office this afternoon. This afternoon, mind you. He was shot. There was a gun lying next to his body. We traced the gun, found its owner, and I'm holding her. Name is Frances Adams. How's that?
Sounds like good work, Heath. Just a moment. Yes?
Mr. Philo Vance is here, Mr. Markham.
Vance? Well, show him in by all means.
Oh, so your friend is here, eh, D.A.? Well, I'm glad. He'll find out that the police don't need him on every case.
Hello, Markham and Sergeant Heath.
Hi, Vance.
How have you been, Heath? Or haven't you made up your mind yet?
I feel fine, Mr. Vance. Wonderful, in fact, and you?
You'll have to forgive the sergeant today, Vance. He feels rather good. He's wrapped up a murder case by himself.
Really? What one is that?
The Joe Mary murder. Girl named Frances Adams shot him.
Is that so? Well, I came up here to tell Markham that a girl named Alice Barkley came to my office a little while ago. And she was under the impression that she killed Joe Mary.
Huh?
Had the gun she did it with, too. Here it is.
Well, Sergeant Heath, this rather complicates things, doesn't it?
Anytime your friend Vance arrives, there's complications, D.A. My advice is...
We'll have to wait for your advice, Sergeant. Hello? Yes? Yes. Yes, of course. Would you bring her right down, please? Thank you. I'll be here. Goodbye.
Now, I was saying that my
advice... We're
going
to still have to wait for that, Sergeant. You see, you've arrested a girl for killing Joe Mary. Vance here has a young lady who says she killed him. And that phone call was from a man named Anderson. He says his wife shot and killed Mary, and he's bringing her down here right away. Hello, long does it take that medical examiner to check a body, Sergeant Heath? He's been working on Joe Mary's body for an hour.
Our friend, the sergeant, doesn't seem to be in a hurry, Markham.
Sure, I'm in a hurry, Vance. Why shouldn't I be in a hurry? When the doc tells us what bullet killed Mary, I'll know which of the three guns I have fired that bullet. I'll know whose gun it is, and I'll know which one of the three girls killed him.
I guess Sergeant Heath has something there, Vance.
Maybe. But I don't think it'll be quite as simple as that. Well, here comes the doctor. We'll know in a second.
Hey, Doc. What kind of a bullet was it that knocked off Mary?
How do you do, gentlemen?
How do you do, gentlemen? How do you do, gentlemen? Doc, we're in a hurry. What kind of a bullet did you find in Mary?
Patience, Sergeant. Patience is a virtue.
All right, so I'm not virtuous. What did you find? We want to know which one of three different gals to hold for this murder.
I'm afraid I won't be able to tell you that, Sergeant. Here were three bullets.
Three bullets?
Three bullets in Mr. Mary's heart. Three bullets from three different guns, I'd say.
Huh?
I beg your pardon?
The sergeant said, huh. That means he's bewildered.
Yes, and he isn't the only one who is.
Bewildered? Oh, I'm supposed to be bewildered, huh? Well, I'm not. All right, so there were three different bullets fired into our friend, Mr. Mary. Doc, which one was fired first? Whoever fired that shot is the murderer.
That's probably correct, Sergeant. Only the three bullets were fired within a very short time of each other. I'm afraid there's no way I or anyone else could tell which one was fired first.
Oh, no, it can't be.
I'm inclined to think it can. I had a feeling this wouldn't be so simple. Sergeant, may I make a suggestion?
Somebody better suggest something.
We have three suspects and three guns. I think the first thing we ought to do is find out if those three guns fired the bullets that the doctor found in Joe Mary's body. Which way to the ballistics department, Sergeant? Well, you have quite a good eye, Sergeant. You hit the bale of cotton without any trouble.
I got trouble, all right, but it's not because of the way I shoot. Okay, Daniels, get that bullet out and check it with the third one we took out of Joe Mary's body.
Right.
Well, Vance, what do you think we'll find?
The same thing we found in the case of the other two guns we checked. That each fired one bullet into Mary.
You know something? I wouldn't mind that. Look, this Barclay gal who came to see you, we know her gun fired one of the bullets, right, D.A.?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. The Anderson gal whose husband phoned us, we know her gun fired one of them. The Adams woman that I picked up, this is her gun we just tested now. Why, this case is a snap. All three of them were in on it. They're all murderers.
I doubt that, Heath. In fact, even if it were right, you could never put all three of them on trial.
No, why not?
Vance is right, Heath. Only one of those women is a murderer, the first one that fired the first bullet into Mary. She killed him. Supposing the other two did fire their guns into his body. If he were already dead, what crime did they commit?
See what I meant, Heath?
We don't know and can never find out which was the first bullet that killed him. Of course, we've got to hold all three of those women. We've got to. Vance, do me a favor. Say that you're a little confused by all of this, too.
All right, Heath, if it'll give you any satisfaction, I'm confused.
Okay, you solved the Canary murder case and the Green murder case and only last week the Eagle murder case. The DA keeps reminding me that I didn't, but you did. Well, I'd like to see you solve this one.
I'd be glad to wind up this case for you, Sergeant. Very glad. And I'd gladly close it for you if...
What's the if, Vance?
If I only knew where to start.
This is District Attorney Markham. The Mary murder case has everyone concerned, including Philo Vance, completely baffled. Joe Mary was murdered. Three bullets were found in his heart, bullets belonging to guns owned by Alice Barclay, Joan Anderson, and Francis Adams. All admit they brought those guns to Mary's lecture, but can't tell why. At Vance's request, all three women were brought into a detention room at headquarters, and I understand Vance is on his way.
Well, somebody say something. It's no good for the three of us to just sit here and stare at each other.
What is there to say, Alice? We don't know where to begin. Francis, the police are going to find out that you were once married to Joe Mary. Why don't you tell them?
And make myself their number one suspect. You can't mean that, Joan.
And while we're on the subject, you and Alice ran around with him at college, didn't you? Why don't you tell the police that?
Don't try to make it look like we killed him, Francis. Don't you do it. I warn you, I may know more about this than I'm saying.
That sounds like a threat.
Well, does it? How does this sound? I think you killed Joe Mary.
You even intimate that again, and you'll be the sorriest girl alive.
Joan! Joan, are we going to stand here and
take
this from
her? Now, look, Alice.
She killed Joan. She killed him. And she's afraid we know how she did it.
Now, look, darling.
She shot him. I know she did it.
Don't cry,
Keep
Alice.
That screaming idiot quiet, Joan. Keep her quiet.
Ladies, please.
What do you want here, Mr. Vance?
Well, first I want to tell you that I couldn't help overhearing what the three of you just said. Very interesting. But, ladies, I have good news for you. You're all free to go home.
Oh, how wonderful.
Only, of course, you're not to leave town.
Not to leave. What?
And Mrs. Anderson.
Yes?
I'd like to see you in my office the first thing in the morning.
I'd prefer it, Joan, if you'd get out of here and let me finish packing.
You can't leave me now, darling. You just can't.
Oh, no? Just you wait and see. I'm not going to be known as the husband of the girl who murdered Joe Mary, believe me. Ex-husband, maybe, but not husband. Get out of the way, please. Oh, answer that, will you? I'm having trouble enough trying to close this bag.
All right. Hello?
Mrs. Anderson?
Yes?
This is Philo Vance.
Oh.
Why weren't you down at my office this morning as I asked you to be?
I'm sorry, I can't talk to you now.
You've got to. I just found out that the police know you ran around with Joe Mary at college and that he walked out on you.
Please, Mr. Vance, let me alone. I can't explain anything to you. Goodbye, Mr. Vance. I'm going to hang up. And if you or the police think that I killed Joe Mary, well, it doesn't matter very much now anyhow.
Yes, yes, come in. Come in. Don't keep knocking like an infernal idiot.
Good afternoon, Professor Colby. Remember me?
Huh? Oh, certainly I remember you. One of my worst students. Got one of my highest marks. Never forgiven you for it. What's your name?
Vance, Professor. Philo Vance.
Oh, yes, Vance, Vance. Well, Vance, what is it?
Professor Colby, can a person be hypnotized into committing murder?
If you'd paid any attention in your classes, you'd know that nobody can be hypnotized into doing anything that's against his moral code. Goodbye, Mr. What'd you say your name was?
Vance.
Yes, Vance.
Tell me this, Professor. Post-hypnosis is a suggestion given to a hypnotized person which must be carried out after he is awakened from hypnosis. Correct?
Yes, yes, of course, that's correct.
The person receiving a post-hypnotic suggestion would have no idea why he was doing something, but he'd know he'd have to do it. Right?
Any child knows that.
Children don't take courses in applied psychology. May I use your phone?
Well, there's a pay station outside.
Oh, this will do very nicely, thank you. I've got to talk to the district attorney and ask him to have three suspects in a murder case brought to my office this evening. And then, Professor Colby, I have a favor to ask of you. A favor I don't think you can well refuse. Barclay, Mrs. Anderson, and Miss Adams.
Yes.
Yes.
Let me start by saying I'm glad you were willing to come to my office.
Oh, not at all.
I appreciate that.
Well, Vance, I got them here. Where's this great experiment you promised?
Please, Markham. Ladies, I'm going to attempt an experiment in mass hypnosis. Does any of the three of you object to being hypnotized?
Well, I don't object.
No, I don't either.
You know as well as I that if you fight against it, you couldn't possibly be hypnotized. So thanks again for your cooperation. Now I'd like to present one of our eminent authorities on hypnotism, Professor Colby.
How do you do, Professor Colby?
Well, turn out all the lights except this one on the desk, please, Vance.
You do it, William Markham. You're nearer to it.
Well, somebody do it. I haven't got all night, you know.
Very well.
Good. Now, ladies, I want you all to sit back in your chairs. Please make yourselves comfortable and think of nothing at all. And if you feel yourselves getting drowsy, close your eyes and sleep. Vance, there they are, the three of them hypnotized. The conscious mind dormant. You won't need me any longer.
No, I know what to do from here on in. Thank you, Professor.
Be sure you do it. Fine thing bothering me at this time of the night. Good night, Mr. Vance. Mr. Markham, Sergeant.
Good night, Professor. He certainly is a strange sort of gentleman, isn't he, Vance?
Professor Colby is wonderful. You know, it's his theory and mine that under hypnosis, if hypnotism was used once before, the subconscious mind will recall what was done at that time. I have one of my secretary's hatpins in my hand, Markham. Observe closely. I'm going to touch Miss Adams' hand with it. There.
What's up, Vance?
Don't be alarmed, Markham. I assure you she didn't feel it. Now for the experiment. Remember, Markham, they're completely under hypnosis. They couldn't lie if they wanted to. Remember that. Miss Adams, I want you to take this gun and shoot it like you shot Joe Merry.
She's doing nothing, Vance, just holding it.
I know. I'll take back that gun, Miss Adams. Thank you. Now, Mrs. Anderson, please take this gun. Thank you.
Now what, Vance?
Hand me that hatpin, Markham, please.
Here you are.
Thanks. I'll just touch Mrs. Anderson's hand with the point. There. That's fine. No reaction, Markham. Now, Mrs. Anderson, I want you to fire that gun the way you fired it at Joe Merry. Now.
Fine experiment, Vance. She hasn't moved a muscle either.
One more subject, Markham. Give me back the gun, Mrs. Anderson. Thank you. Now, Miss Barclay. First, the hatpin test. No reaction, Markham. Now, take this gun, Miss Barclay, and fire it just as you did at Joe Merry. Now.
Vance, this is ridiculous. She's doing absolutely nothing.
I know. But believe me, that isn't all I know. I know who killed Joe Merry. Can't you tell, Markham? Miss Barclay.
Yes?
You've got to help me. I know you were hypnotized the day Joe Merry was murdered. I know who hypnotized you. The real murderer gave herself away in my office a little while ago. But I can't prove anything without your help.
In the interest of society and to help trap a clever murderer, Miss Barclay, will you please?
Will I be in danger, Mr. Markham?
Mr. Vance and I will try to see that the danger is as slight as possible.
Very well, gentlemen. I'll do it. Hello, Francis.
Oh, it's you, Alice. Come in.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Thank you.
Tea?
Yes, please. Francis, we're quite alone, aren't we?
Why, yes, of course. Why? Cream?
Yes, please. I just wanted to tell you that as long as the police have apparently given up on us, you and I ought to have an understanding.
Really? What sort of an understanding? Sugar?
Yes, too, thank you. Well, for one thing, when you hypnotized Joan and me several weeks ago and gave us a post-hypnotic suggestion to bring guns to Joe Merry's lecture, I wasn't hypnotized.
I don't know what you mean. Is the tea strong enough?
Yes, quite. I saw you shoot Joe Merry with your own gun, then with mine, and then with Joan.
You're dreaming, child.
Oh, no, I'm very much awake. I let you go through with your plans because, you see, I could use some money.
Oh, well, that's too bad. But you won't need money very shortly. You'll never leave here alive. You were clever enough to figure out what I had done. Very well. But if you think that you can blackmail me, you're mistaken. I'll kill you with my hands. It'll make no noise. You'll never feel anything. Just my hands on your neck like this. A little while. No pain. No knowledge. No fear.
All right, Miss Adams, take your hands off Miss Barclay. Arrest her, Markham.
All right, Vance.
She's all yours. Yours and the state's. Miss Deering, inasmuch as you are employed by me, would it be too much to ask you why you're not working?
I'm only hired between the hours of 9 and 5, Vance. It's 5:30 now. How about breaking down and telling me how you solved the Merry murder case?
All right. To begin with, when Professor Colby hypnotized the three ladies, only two of them were really hypnotized.
Oh.
The actual murderer, Francis Adams, fought against it. knowing her subconscious mind, which she could not control, might reveal something to us.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole purpose of the experiment, to find which girl would be afraid to be hypnotized.
But how did you know Miss Adams was faking?
Your hatpin told me.
Well, how do you like that? I've been using it for months, and I never knew it could open its mouth.
I touched the point of it to all three of the ladies. One of them, Frances Adams, jumped a little. That was enough to prove she wasn't hypnotized, and indicated she was the murderer, but didn't prove it. So we framed a little scene between her and Alice Barkley, and we got our proof.
Well, and why did Miss Adams become a murderer?
She'd once been married to Joe Merry. When he left town with his divorce, he also stole most of her jewelry and ready cash. And there you are.
Oh, really? Where am I?
With me, Ellen. Right at the end of the Merry murder case.
Philo Vance, on Tuned to Yesterday, the second episode in that series, out of WOR in New York, and broadcast over Mutual on October 3rd, 1946. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.